Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay. Yo.
Dance, Kiwi, dance.
Or just sit there and do anything.
Do anything.
Just
Kiwi.
Look at us like, what's wrong with you guys?
Give us a woof. Give us a woof if you like red.
Speak. Speak. No?
No, we didn't teach her speak yet. Hey, everyone, how's it going? You're listening to The Command Zone. We were trying to get my dog to talk. It didn't work. I'm Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Kiwi is always next to us whenever we record. Usually she's sitting or sleeping in the bed. Close by.
She looks as if she's trying to understand everything. She probably does. In fact, she's probably like, guys, give me a deck. I will kick your butts now.
Oh my gosh. I need to figure out what Kiwi's colors are. Maybe she's up.
Clearly white in something.
Yeah, white. Maybe she's Bant. I don't know. She is very controlling. She does me to do stuff.
She's a corgi. She's going to boss everybody around.
Yeah. That sounds about right. We have a great episode today. We are finally covering our final top 10 list. It is top 10 blue cards.
Blue!
The hardest one to put together.
You my boy, Blue!
You my boy. Lil Blue coming through. Blue Christmas.
Yeah, this was a tough one. We thought it would be, and turns out it was. I had a couple different lists, and either one of them I was like I could make two separate top 10s.
Yeah, I agree. I actually have had two separate top threes, top fives, like every part of it, I could have been like, well, there's an honorable mention that could have gone number three.
One of those could have gone up to the top 10. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. But we have a lot of to do in our upkeep here today.
Yeah. Upkeep.
We have a very exciting announcement. If you have not heard,
woo-hoo.
Jimmy was selected to the Community Cup team by Wizards of the Coast this year.
Yeah.
So, very exciting. I mean, do you want to explain what the Community Cup is for those that don't know?
Community Cup is a yearly event that Wizards of the Coast holds where they bring in representatives of the community to come in and play against a Wizards team. It's 8v8. Usually in years past, they've put up like a nominate who you want to be in the Community Cup, and you could go into the website, send some people in, and there'd be a little campaigning going around everyone on Twitter. This year, Wizards decided to just choose the 8 members of the Community Cups themselves. You guys will notice, unfortunately, Josh Lee Kwai was not on the list.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a bummer, but I'm happy that the Command Zone is going to be represented.
Yeah, I've been talking about bringing a cardboard cutout of you to Wizards of the Coast and then like taking pictures of it at all the different parts.
So. I'll be like the lawn gnome.
Yeah.
Boy, I don't know if that's better or worse than actually getting invited.
It's probably worse. Yeah, I'm sorry, Josh. I wish you could be there with me. I will be representing the Command Zone specifically. I think Adam Cyborski is also on the team. He writes a lot of Commander articles, mm-hmm. too. But outside of that, there's no EDH casual love, so we have to...
There's often not anybody from the EDH Commander community represented at all.
Yeah.
Or definitely not usually somebody who's sort of purely in that realm like you are.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting for us in our community. Just to have a representative there. It's great for the show. You want to talk about some of the other people that are there? There's a lot of our friends are there.
Yeah, two guests on the show already, MTA cast, Megan and Maria are both going, as is Wedge from the Manosaurus. And usually they focus on, it seems like they focus a lot more on the Twitch streamers. And it's great because Wedge is definitely a YouTuber.
Yeah, that's so pretty great.
It looks like Wizards is actively trying to really expand the horizons of the Community Cup. And the reach hopefully will get bigger as well. Kenji Egashira, Numat the Nummy, and SG Doc, who are both streamers, are going to be there.
Both friends of ours.
The guy that just won the Pro Tour, Joel Larson, or I guess it's Joel Larson.
Yeah, I think it is Joel.
Yeah, with a
I hear he's pretty good at Magic.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's also like challenging Brian Kibler for best looking player.
He's like, best hair.
Best hair by far.
He wins best hair.
It is finally coiffed. Yeah, so I'm really excited. It's going to happen in September, the 17th or the 18th or the 20th. So you guys can tune in, and I'm sure we'll mention it.
Do you follow it on Twitch? Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's going to be on the Magic Twitch channel, I'm pretty sure. And also the very exciting Loading Ready Run is going to produce the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're organizing the stream and everything, and those guys know what they're doing.
You better start brushing up, because I know they do like a...
They do all sorts of...
A flavor draft, and they do... All kinds of crazy stuff. I would watch the Community Cup from years past. I know you've seen some of it.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you do not want WotC to beat you.
Yeah, and I think the WotC is like 2-6 total in the Community Cup, so we definitely cannot let them beat us.
Yeah, because now there's even more pressure, because you're just going to catch hell from all the other teams that have come before if you guys lose. So
yeah, exactly. So we'll do our best. I'll make sure to brush up. I'll just play more Modo, which is kind of a punishment, I guess.
Yeah, really punishing. Really punishing. So make sure you do tune into that to support Jimmy and support the community. It's going to be really exciting. It's
support
great for
the
show.
Podcast.
Yeah, it's really good for the show. Just gets exposure for us. So, yep, I'm bummed I can't go, but, man, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be rooting for you.
Yeah, and if they do bring up the community vote again next year, we'll make sure that we destroy the community vote and get you in there instead of me. So.
We'll see. You know, I was bummed when I didn't get chosen, but then hearing on Twitter, there's a lot, like, Ifro didn't get chosen. Like, Gabby Sparks didn't get chosen. Like, there was a lot of people that were, frankly, more deserving than me to go that didn't get chosen. So, you know, I'm just happy one of us gets to go and represent the show.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's so much stuff happening for Magic in the next few months, from the World's Championship in PAX to all the Battle for Zendikar stuff. It's going to be really exciting coming up. Good times.
Super exciting. Mm-hmm. I've got a big thank you to throw out there. I asked for some book recommendations a couple episodes ago, and holy crap, I got so many. I seriously have a list. It's got to be close to 100 books.
100?
Yeah, it's insane.
Holy crap.
I think we got more book recommendations than we usually do get, like, contest entries where we're giving stuff to people. Like, that's how awesome. Our listeners are awesome. It's been really great. I'm really excited. I'm unfortunately not going to be able to read that many books in the 3 weeks, but I'm going to have, like, books to spare for, like, a couple of years. So many that the police are coming after me.
Those are the book police. Like, hey, Josh, stop reading so much.
Stop wanting to read 100 books. I don't know. I made robot gestures when I did that.
It's because you're a robot. They're like, he's getting too smart. We have to unplug him. Send the cops.
Oh, no. They're onto me. Also, I got a really nice letter from a listener, Russell Lee, who is at Rogue Artificer on Twitter, who... he deck doctored for me. He could not believe that I did not have a Basilisk Caller in my Tim deck. Basilisk Caller is a artifact that gives death touch to a creature, and because I had mentioned previously that I just didn't own one, and that's why I wasn't in there, and he just thought that was a travesty, so he decided to send me one for the deck. So
wow,
Russell, you're my new favorite listener.
Yeah, man.
Way to go.
You're Josh's number one guy.
You and Dan Locke, because Dan sent me all those sweet tokens.
Those tokens,
for the Titania deck. So
I'm still waiting for a busload of Kiki Jikis to send
me. A busload? Jeez.
Every listener, if you ever crack one, it's coming to me. I'm just kidding. It's really awesome. Basilisk Caller is an incredible equipment, so it fits perfectly into that.
People
deck
are surprised how spendy it is. I mean, Russell, that's not a cheap card. It's like $8 or something.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's because it costs one to put down and two to equip.
Yeah.
It's just so, very so efficient. Good. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, another exciting thing that we totally forgot to talk about in our quote unquote keeping it current episode. We were like, why didn't we talk about that? It's From the Vault Angels.
Yeah. And our good friend Gavin Verhey works on these as well. Yes, it's the new From the Vault. If you guys don't know what they are, it's a collection of premium foils that Wizards releases. I think they do one a year. Mm-hmm. They've done From the Vault Relics, From the Vault Annihilation.
Dragons,
yeah. So they're always flavored to one thing, and this year it's Angels. And that's super exciting because EDH uses a lot of these cards. Very, very cool. There are, I think, 15 total.
Yep.
And some very big reprints and also some non-prints. We all thought Lynn Vala was going to be in the set.
Yeah, I thought she was a shoo-in after Iona got printed in Modern Masters 2015. Yeah. But it turns out they printed Iona again. Gavin, love ya. I don't know why Wizard wants so many Ionas in the world because nobody likes that card. But if you, unless you are some of the people that do like Iona, well, now she's just easier to get.
Yeah, but there are a lot of great creatures in here, especially for EDH players. For one, Teriel, Reckoner of Souls, who was originally an EDH pre-con commander, has had its first foil printing now. And
Teriel is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's also the only card in the whole set of From the Vault Angels that has the color black in it.
Oh, that's true. Well, that makes sense, because black's not super... I mean, Kalia, I guess, would be the other one that you could...
Yeah, but she's not an angel,
Tariel, let me just read. Tariel is 4 and Mardu, so 7 total for a 4/7 flying vigilant angel. Of course, you can tap her and choose a creature card at random from target opponent's graveyard. Put that card onto the battlefield under your control.
Sweet.
That's it. Cool. Yeah. It just stays. You don't have to sack it or anything later. Yeah. You just get it.
She does cost 7 to put out, which is a bit of a bummer, but it's EDH, whatever. Get it out in turn 4. I bet.
Yeah, that is a pretty sweet card, I gotta say.
In fact, all of these angels pretty much have giant casting costs. We also have the one and only Avacyn, Angel of Hope.
I'm the most excited about that one in the set.
Yeah, for sure. That card was very expensive to begin with, and this will not... It's not going to drastically reduce the price, but buying a From the Vault Angels is like one of the better deals you can do when buying Magic stuff, because you know every card that's going to be in there. There's no randomness,
yep.
And a lot of these cards have a lot of value. Like,
yeah. And Avacyn is just one of those cards that was spendy, but you want her in a lot of decks.
Yeah.
So it just more of them in the world is just good for all commander players.
Yeah. So overall, I think there's like 6 or 7 legendary angels in here, and I could see myself building a deck just by getting one of these and being like, cool, I've never built a Boros deck. Aurelia the War Leader looks pretty sweet for that, and now I have this awesome foil version of her.
For sure. I think it might be worth it just for value. Like, you get Avacyn, you get Platinum Angel, you get... Yeah. A few others. Aurelia is a really good one.
The Angels is also a card that's played in Legacy, right?
Yeah, so you have a number of cards that can go in different decks that I think value-wise, if you can find it for MSRP, it's not bad.
Yeah, so we encourage you guys to go check out your local gaming store, see what they'll sell to you for at. Some gaming stores are just awesome and just will sell at MSRP. There was a ton of From the Vault Annihilation printed.
Yep.
You could get all of those cards at MSRP. So hopefully you can also find this set at your local gaming store. For a good price.
All right, we have one other thing we wanted to do.
Random giveaway.
So we're going to give away a prize, which is going to be, what are we going to do? A draft set of Magic Origins?
Yeah, let's do that. Draft set of Magic Origins.
So 3 packs of Magic Origins. We've decided we're going to give it to a random Twitter follower who has interacted with us in the last like week or so. You wanna make the announcement?
Yeah. The person is Joseph Bennett at Tasuki 87. Joseph tweeted,
congratulations.
At us, congrats. If you hear your name, send us an email, commandcast@rocketjump.com, with your address, and we'll send your stuff out. We just got everything else out for the other draft packs winners, as well as our Deck Doctor winners. So you guys should be expecting those in your real life inbox soon. So yeah, Joseph, congrats. He tweeted us. He found us through MTG Cast.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we are on MTG Cast now, in case you haven't noticed. What we've been doing is refurbishing a few of our older episodes and putting them up there. Taking out the stuff that's not timely anymore, and just to sort of get some more exposure. So
yeah, definitely.
Joseph, cool. Congratulations. Congrats, make sure to email us so you can get your packs.
Yeah.
All right, now time for the main topic.
All right, top 10 blue cards. So Josh and I, it's the same setup each time. We both make an independent list of each other of what we think the top 10 blue cards in EDH are for the format. That's repetitive. The main stipulation is that they are going to be under $25 because...
Right.
Some cards are extremely expensive. We don't want this to be a restrictive list, being like, if you want to play the best card in blue in EDH,
it's $150.
Yeah.
So Force of Will can't go on there.
Yeah, I kind of broke my own rule here because I did put a certain spell on here that is a little more expensive. But we'll talk about it when we get there. We just usually try to limit the cost so that we're not just dropping, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor.
It's mostly to keep the $50+ cards off there. Like, yeah, because I have a couple cards that are right on that line. I think they are under 25, but they might be 26, 27 sometimes. Yeah.
And one thing we should say about blue is that it is considered historically to be the most powerful color in Magic.
I mean, it is the most powerful color in the history of Magic. It's, lately, they've been really helping to balance it out more. So if you go through the last 5 or 6 years, it's not. But if you take the entirety of Magic, it definitely is, without question.
Yeah, Ancestral Vision is just straight up the best.
Recall,
yeah. Ancestral Vision is the
fair version that's still banned?
Yeah, the fair version that's still banned. Yeah, that shows you how powerful blue is.
And then they made the even more fair version, Treasure Cruise, and that got banned.
Wizards doesn't seem to learn their lesson when it comes to drawing 3 cards in blue for 1 mana.
It's just that's how powerful the effect is. They keep trying to nerf it, and then it just still keeps being too powerful.
Yeah, exactly. So there's lots of really great cards in blue, and that also makes the price tag just increase on the median just slightly higher than the rest of the other colors because of that.
Okay, let's talk really quickly. We've gone through this in all the other episodes, so I'm not going to go in-depth about what our criteria sort of is for creating the list. So we think about mana cost, total mana cost. If it's super high, it's just going to be hard for it to be, you know, very high on the list, unless it's incredibly powerful. How useful is the card in a multitude of decks and color combinations? So does it cover areas that other colors don't, or is it only good in, if it's in mono blue? Quadrant theory, which is how does the card do in the developing stages of the game, when you're ahead in the game, when you're behind in the game, and when the game is at parity. And then does the card either combat or enable strategies which are prevalent in the format? So does it work really good against token decks, Voltron decks? Is it a board wipe? Is it mana ramp or card draw? Those are just things that are universal to the format.
Yep.
The very last thing we should say is we did disallow one card because, similar to Soul Ring and Demonic Tutor, we figured it would be just the consensus number one.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to let you all really quick guess what that card could be. It's Cyclonic Rift.
Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah. So we're pretty sure both of us would have that as our number one, and it's not fun if there's no suspense.
Yeah, and it. Some of you may disagree. You're wrong. Just kidding. Cyclonic Rift is one in the blue for an instant. You can bounce a non-land permanent to its owner's hand, but it has overload on it. For 7 mana, you can bounce every non-land permanent you don't own to its owner's hand.
So don't control.
Don't control, yeah. So it's just like, boom, everything's gone all at once. I just think it's similar to our number one black card, which is it's the number one blue card I search out usually if I'm going to tutor for it with a mystical tutor or whatever.
It's incredibly powerful. It's a one-sided board wipe. It gets around all the problematic things like Indestructible, Shroud Hexproof. It also does all non-land permanents, not just creatures.
Yep.
Cards broken.
Yeah, it's insane. There's also a counterspell that we're just not going to include on the list because we do have counterspells on here. And yes, the original counterspell is very powerful, obviously.
I don't even think it's the best counterspell anymore, though. So,
yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But it's worth mentioning because it's a classic.
Yeah, it is a classic.
I do like the classics.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we get all these little corner cases out of the way before people yell at us in the comments.
We're still going
to
get yelled at.
Yep. Got to accept it.
All right. Let's so do you want to start?
Sure. My top 10 blue cards. All right, my number 10, we're going to go back and forth and talk about each of the cards separately, unless they repeat. Sometimes we steal each other's
thunders. I didn't
even
think of this card, and it is very, very good, and I've seen you do some crazy stuff with it.
It may actually drop down further on the list the more I think about it. It is Dream Halls. Until it just wrecks your face. It's 3 and 2 blue for an enchantment. Instead of paying the casting cost for a spell of any color, its caster may choose and discard a card that shares at least one color with that spell. If the spell has X in its casting cost, X is 0. So this is a world enchantment. Any player can do it. It basically turns every card into a Force of Will-esque ability where you can discard a card that shares a color with it to play it for free. So instance, you can discard another card that is blue and just get it out of your hand. It is very... very powerful.
Just one thing before we get yelled at again. It's not an enchant world. When he says world enchantment, he just meant that it affects the entire table.
Right, correct.
This card, I've seen you do things like... because a lot of times in a game, you see this moment where one player has like 30 cards in their hand.
Yeah.
Which is really scary, but at the same time, it's a little bit held in check by the fact that they only have a certain amount of mana.
And they're going to have to discard their hand.
If the first card they play with when they have their 30 cards is Dream Halls, it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Because then they go, discard this, play this, discard this, play this, discard this, play this. And it's just like, oh, man. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, this is just, for me, it's just such an absurdly powerful card because the cards aren't exiled when you need to cast the cards. You discard them. So you're still putting them into a place where you have access to them. For something like Force of Will, you have to exile a card from your hand or Misdirection. So I like Dream Halls because of that.
Which, by the way, Misdirection and Force of Will are awesome cards, so any card that's hearkening to that, even if it is exactly that, is very good.
Yeah, exactly. It's great because you can just put out a 10-drop for a 1-drop, if that makes sense. You know,
for nothing.
Nothing, yeah. Well, you're exchanging a 1-drop for it, yeah. So you're putting out a Creator of Behemoth and tossing a Wood Elves.
I mean, it's card disadvantage technically, but you're in blue. You don't care as much about it because you have Consecrated Sphinx or something that's just drawing you 50 cards. And
if a card said, discard a card from your hand, pay, gain X mana, where X is the next card you cast of that color type, like you play it immediately. Yeah. And that's kind of what Dream Halls is. Now, of course, this card isn't good if other people have giant hands. But usually this is the kind of thing that you play and close out the game with.
Yep, for sure. That's
what you're aiming to do.
It's very good. I did not think of it. It might have made my top 10 list. My number 10 is Propaganda.
Propaganda.
So we talked about this card a million times. It's 2 and a blue for an enchantment. It just says
creatures can't attack you
unless their controller pays 2 mana for each creature attacking you. So this card, when I was thinking about it, I was like, what are the blue cards I have in every one of my decks that have blue? And Propaganda is one of them. I think I probably have one deck with blue that doesn't have it, but in general, the opportunity cost of it is just so low and its impact is so large.
Yeah, it pretty much guarantees you safe passage for the majority of the game, usually.
It means you're not going to die early, almost always.
Yeah, there's no incentive for someone to attack you because they don't want to waste their mana. It's just a really great way to put up the shields without actually having to put a creature in the way of something.
It makes the price of attacking you, even if they pay the mana, very high because they sort of have to give up their turns to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So they may come after you and they may do it, but they're leaving themselves so vulnerable to the other players at the table that it makes it very hard for them to attack you. And then if they don't, then you're fine. You're just sitting there. They're playing other cards, attacking other people. And what does attacking other people do? It gets them going at each other. So then you're even more protected because, you know, if Alex attacks Craig because I have Propaganda, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden Craig's like, hey, and he attacks Alex back. How good is that? You're just like, sweet.
Yeah, it's great. It's super good politically. I should have put up my list for that aspect alone, that the politics of this card make it, the hidden politics. You don't need to say anything with Propaganda.
Right.
Someone swings at you and they're like, are you going to pay 2 for each creature? They won't be like, oh, how rude. They'll be like, oh, okay, I'll just swing at someone else.
Yep.
Like, you've deflected them without having to say or do anything to affect their, like, opinion of you. My number 9 is Ixodron. This was played against me many times last night.
Oh, man. Vinny just kept playing Ixodron.
And it kept doing work.
Yeah, it does crazy stuff.
It's 3/2 blue for a star creature illusion. As Ixodron enters the battlefield, turn all other non-token creatures face down. So it's a board wipe in a weird way. It turns everything into a morphed 2/2.
It sort of humilities everything in a way.
But you can't unmorph it. You can't get
unless it's a morph card.
Unless it's a morph card,
it's not like Manifest, right? Where a manifested card, you can flip up for its mana cost.
Right.
Ixodron doesn't do that.
It just turns everything into 2/2s, colorless 2/2s, and his power
even
and
your commander.
Yep. And his power and toughness are each equal to the number of face down creatures on the battlefield. So usually you play this, it's like a 30-30. And the reason I like this a lot is because, one, it turns off everyone's utility creatures. Even though it doesn't target token creatures, it doesn't matter because the tokens are still 1/1s. And like their guy that gives them overwhelm effects or whatever is now just a random 2/2. But the nice thing is that you can actually... attacking and defending is way different because now everyone has even trades with everyone else. So it's no longer I swing at you with the 10-10. You're like, oh, crap, what am I going to do? It's like I swing at you with 5 2/2s. You also have 5 2/2s. You can block. You should know what all the creatures are because when they flipped...
you knew what
they
were.
It's open information to everyone. Yeah, so it's really
and you have to know what the commander is because it's going to do commander damage.
Yeah,
so a lot of times they swing and you don't block their commander because you don't want to kill it and let them put it back in the command zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card changes the game in a really crazy way.
Yeah, and I like that it puts your commander upside down because usually your commander, you want to have access to it. So you want to have be able to sack it and bring it back to your command zone. This just puts it in a place where you can't really interact with it in any meaningful way because your creatures that could maybe have done something to it are also upside down.
Yep. Super powerful effect. I really like this card. But I don't have it on my list.
I know. I don't have your next one on my
list.
Our
lists are pretty different this time around.
Up until the top 4.
Yeah. Okay, my number 9 is Rite of Replication. It's 2/2 blue for a sorcery. It says, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target creature. But it has kicker 5, so if you play 5 extra mana, making it 9 total. If it was kicked, you put 5 of those tokens onto the battlefield instead. So you make 5 copies of something. You almost never play this unless you're kicking it.
Yeah.
And this is the one of those cards that, you know, we all know I love cards where it's like, boom, play it, win. And this is just, yeah, this is one of those ones where you play it, make five of something, you get five enter the battlefield triggers, or you get, yeah, you know, some other effect when you do it, or you have haste out and you just...
It could be anyone's creature as well, not just your own, which is nice.
Yeah, it's very, very powerful. It's a win condition in a lot of blue decks.
Yeah, it's a house. Do you have any favorite interactions where you played this and did something crazy?
Vinny played once, and what's the dragon that it makes another huge dragon when
it's Vara Hellkite?
Yeah, and so he made six of those, attacked, and made six more.
Six sixes, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because he had haste. Yeah. So it was just like all of a sudden he went from one of those to like 30 of them or something. Wow. Insanity, you know? And I was like, right, replication, man. That's what it does. Yeah. I lose, by the way.
Yeah, I lose. I cannot stop. Like, I will tap and do one damage to one with Tim.
Yeah.
He's like, I swing at you for a billion.
It's one of those cards where they play it, you sort of throw your hands up. You're like, yeah, you got me, man. That card is just a house.
All right. My next card on the list for number eight, numero ato. That's not how you say eight.
Ocho.
I don't know why I said ato. I took Spanish for like 3 years. Is Rhystic Study. It's two in the blue for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent plays a spell, you may draw a card unless that player plays one.
This card's so good. I have it higher.
Yeah, well, I was so upset last night. You and Vinny both had Rhystic Study out, and I was the
on
only
turn
one
three
paying for them. We were playing with a guy named Andy, and Vinny was just letting you draw cards. You drew like...
I was letting Vinny draw cards.
You,
well, that's...
You probably drew like 15 cards off of it.
Oh, more than that, yeah. That's the implication. If two people have it, you're like, I'll let you draw, you let me draw.
Yeah.
Deal.
Oh, my gosh. I was just like, why? Just pay the extra mana. It's like, I have stuff to do. It's like, I don't care. They have more things to do. Now they're drawing more cards. They're like, you're getting them the cards that you are trying to counter, was my way of seeing it.
It does make your counter spells way worse because you counter one of my spells, but I draw an extra card, so it doesn't actually cost me a card, but it costs you a card.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I have this at my number five. So
yeah, we'll talk about more in a second because it's just... So
I mean, I don't know what else there is to
good.
Say. It's just one
it
of
is.
The best card draw spells.
Yeah, ugh. And it just does work throughout the entire game because so often you're tapping out or you need to hold that extra mana because you do have stuff that you want to do.
I mean, if you get it out on turn three or four, you're basically time walking them if they don't... Like, they can't play their best thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people are like, whatever, it's one card. And then, whatever, it's one card. And then, before you know it, like you said, you drop 15, 20 cards off it.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to make sure that you ask them each time so that can get a little unnerving. Like, oh my gosh, he's drawn three cards already this turn. I still want to play my spells.
All right. My number eight. I wanted to put it higher on the list, but I couldn't justify it.
It's not even on my list.
That hurts my feelings.
I know
it's my favorite card. It's Fate Stitcher. I don't even think I need to really talk much about it because I've talked about it so many times. And
maybe I'll cosplay as Fate Stitcher someday. It'll be the grossest cosplay ever.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I don't think I want
to. Let's ask Christine Sprankle to do it. Yeah, she'd be a better looking Fate Stitcher than you. Sorry.
That is true.
Fate Stitcher is three and a blue for a whatever. You tap him. And he either taps or untaps a target creature. That's it. That's
no,
all
permanent,
that matters.
Permanent.
Oh, target permanent.
Yeah,
sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah, permanent.
And you can unearth it for one blue. You can just cast it from your graveyard. It gets haste. And you can just do it for one more turn, and then you exile it.
Right. Really, he's just a guy out there with extreme versatility. He can untap your land. He can untap your Gilded Lotus. He can tap somebody else's creature or their Gilded Lotus. He can just stop them from doing what they want to do, or you double up some effect you've got. You can untap your creature just to give it pseudo vigilance, or if you've got Tim, you can just ping something twice. So much interaction with all kinds of things on the board at all time. Fate Stitcher, I just love it. Every time I have it, I feel like I got stuff under control. They got an Animar. They made it arbitrarily large. Tap it.
Yeah. You definitely do have things under, especially when you have a Gilded Lotus out or a Thran Dynamo. It's like, I have six mana off that now thanks to Fate Stitcher. It's like, just the ability to untap a permanent is incredibly powerful in this format. It's crazy how many creatures need to get tapped. And the fact that it's not non-land is very nice.
It's one of those cards, if I get it in my opening hand, I never partial perish it away.
Oh, I would never partial pair this card. Yeah, it's just because you know by the time you cast it, it's going to do all the work in the world for you.
Yep.
My number seven would be Bribery.
Oh, this is a really good card.
Three. And
how is this not on my list?
I don't know. I don't know how Face Stitcher's not on my list. Again, there's just too many good cards in blue, and too many of them. I have like pet favorites too that I just love that made my list.
That's why we make separate lists, dude.
Yep. Yeah, it's nice. You guys get like a top 20 instead of a top 10. Bribery is three blue for a sorcery. Search target opponent's library for a creature card and put that card onto the battlefield under your control. then that player shuffles their library. I just like this because we play in a group that almost always there's actually, I'd say there's always a good target for this.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's like, what if I briberied for a Fate Stitcher out of your deck? Would you be unhappy?
Yeah, I'd be really unhappy because I love that card.
Yeah, exactly.
But normally, well, my decks are always bad to bribery because I don't have a lot of like awesome creatures. But you can always just Consecrated Sphinx. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I mean, the dream is Blightsteel or Ulamog or something like that. Blightsteel, Ulamog.
But even the dream is Consecrated Sphinx.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For 5 mana, you get to have a great card. And it's... You don't get to find that out of your own library. It's great that you get to search someone else's because it could be in a color that you need something from. You know, you're playing against a Carador deck. That deck has so many insane creatures. You get Iona out.
Yep.
You get cards that you would never in your dreams cast because it's just you don't own it.
Or it's just, like you said, it's outside your colors.
Outside your colors, yeah.
Yeah, so you can create a synergy that should never exist. Like going and getting Avacyn in certain decks is super powerful because they can't duplicate that effect. And so it breaks the balance of like, sort of the color wheel. Also, it is cheating mana cost because you can pay
in a big way.
Yeah, because you can pay five mana, right?
Yeah.
You can pay 5 mana and you can get a 10 mana creature or something. Like, that's cheating mana cost. What do we always say? Cheating mana cost is some of the most powerful thing you can do. So,
yeah.
And
there's nothing better than killing Craig with his own infect creature. Right? Am I right?
Everything that kills Craig gets a bump on Jimmy's list.
Yeah, pretty much.
My number 7 is Time Stretch. Interesting because I don't really like extra turn effects personally, but as far as pure power level, it's 8 and 2 blue for a sorcery. It says target player takes 2 extra turns after this one.
That's pretty intense.
Target player almost always means you. I've never seen anybody play a Time Stretch on somebody else, although I guess you could.
Well, you could if it was like they're going to mill themselves out or something. I don't know.
Two cards left.
But then you give them 2 whole turns.
I'd rather just say draw 2 cards somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if you're doing secret partners, you could potentially do this.
Yeah.
Once the partners are revealed or whatever.
I mean, this is an all-star in the Jaleva, the Narset, the Joyra decks. Those decks that are just going to cheat these out really early. These are, you know.
Yeah, you're not really paying this for 10 mana if you can help it.
You're usually recurring it, taking all the turns. Again, not something I generally like to do myself, but I do recognize it's super powerful, and I've seen people do it and win.
Yeah.
And, this is just an extremely powerful effect. 2 turns. I mean, 1 turn is a lot. 2?
2's insane.
Yeah.
Usually 1 turn effects I'm not a huge fan of because it doesn't... It's almost more annoying than game-breaking because sometimes, like, I take an extra turn, I untap, I play 1 more thing and pass.
Right,
like,
exactly. Wow, unless you can recur it or continuously do it, which this does by itself.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, was that really worth it? It's like Rao Zarek. It's like, you want to always... Oh, gosh, could you imagine comboing this with something like Rao Zarek and getting a Planeswalker to ultimate?
Just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's the nice thing about this is that you are able... Those extra turns, if you find the best ways to utilize them, then that's where you're really... Like, playing a Memnarch deck that already has a lot of mana ramp.
Oh,
taking an extra
everything.
Turn, you can steal even more stuff. Like, that's why people are afraid of you untapping, is because you can use your mana for deadly stuff. So, yeah, I like Time Stretch a lot. I'm actually not going to mention my number 6 because this is the first time that my number, anything like above number 5 was someone else's number 1.
Oh, yeah. This is interesting. Yeah, my number 1 is really low
on
your
list. I'm going to throw an honorable mention here.
Although we didn't, in our artifact one, both our number 1s weren't even on the other people's list.
Yeah,
so.
That's really funny. I'm just going to throw in a honorable mention here instead of my normal number 6. So if you're watching the video, it's going to be a little confusing. But it's Capsize.
This is on my honorable mentions,
too. It's got buyback. Buyback for 3 means you may pay an additional 3 colorless mana as you cast a spell. If you do, put this card into your hand as it resolves, so you get to have it for free. It's 1 blue-blue, return target permanent to its owner's hand. So for 6 mana total for 4 blue-blue, you can endlessly return anything to its owner's hand at instant speed for the rest of the game.
It's so powerful.
Yeah, unless someone counters it or gets it out of your hand.
Because pinpoint removal is not something that you like to have in your deck because it is card disadvantage.
Yeah.
But you need it all the time. All the time you're like, man, I need to take care of that one thing.
Yep.
But Capsize is not card disadvantage because you keep the card.
Yeah, exactly. And if you do need to just use it for its effect, it's still a good card because it's return target permanent. So you can bounce that land. You can bounce whatever you want.
Yeah, it's very, very good. It was on my honorable mentions,
You can
too.
Bounce that Planeswalker, too, before adults. You know, there's lots of stuff you can do here.
Bounce that Anamar that's arbitrarily large.
Yeah. Oh, Anamar.
My number 6 is Mystical Tutor. It's 1 blue for an instant. It says, search your library for an instant or sorcery card and reveal that card. Shuffle your library, then put that card on top of it. So it's like Enlightened Tutor. It's like those card disadvantage tutors. This was another card where I just looked and I said, well, what blue card do I have in all of my decks? And I have a Mystical Tutor in literally every single one.
Yeah.
It's just the versatility of tutors in our format so strong. If you need a board wipe, you can go get it. If you need Capsize or something or a pinpoint removal spell, you can go get it. If you're at that time and you're about to attack with Jaleva, you can go put Time Stretch on top of your deck and attack with her and know that you're going to get it. There's That's so nice. Many ways to use it. Yeah, just so strong.
Yeah, blue's one of those colors where the top of your deck is kind of like the graveyard in black decks.
Yes, that's a really good point.
Where you get to use that to your advantage.
Yeah, Melek wants to know what's on the top of the deck. So many Narset.
Right.
Those kind of things, yeah.
Yeah. My number five, is Phyrexian Metamorph. This is like the first blue card I really fell in love with when I started playing EDH. He's 3 colorless mana, or she, I guess, and actually it can be anything. It is 3 colorless mana and a Phyrexian mana, and you can pay a Phyrexian mana either with a blue mana or 2 life, so you can pay this for 3 and 2 life or 3 and a blue. And you can have Phyrexian Metamorph enter the battlefield as a copy of any artifact or creature on the battlefield, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. If you have artifact synergies, this is great. Usually this just comes down and copies a Gilded Lotus or even a Soul Ring or just the best creature on the board.
Yep.
Now, Clever Impersonator is really similar to it, but the reason I like this is that you can pay it for just colorless, so even if you're off your colors, it doesn't matter. You can still play the Phyrexian Metamorph on turn 3 if you have 3 mana no matter what.
Yeah, if you just don't happen to have a blue.
Whereas Clever Impersonator is 2 and 2 blue, and that's a lot harder to cast. But that can copy any permanent, which is nice, but I think non-land, but...
Yeah, on my honorable mentions, I had Clever Impersonator, but those two cards are just, they're basically cousins.
Yeah, they're very, very similar. This could just be me with my own personal bias, but I think Phyrexian Metamorph is just one of those auto put in any blue decks because it's the same like copy artifact, except it's better. It costs 1 mana more and 2 life, but instead of copying just an artifact, you can copy the biggest creature on the board as well. You can copy Avacyn if you want.
It's copy artifact and clone on one card.
Yeah.
So exactly. It's 2 for 1. Yeah, exactly. Those are just cards that we always love. So good. Yep. My number 5 is Rhystic Study.
Rhystic Study.
We've already talked about. Just drawing cards is good.
And
this is
good.
One of the better, it's probably the second best.
PSA time. If someone has a Rhystic Study out and you can afford to pay the mana, you should pay it.
He's still salty about last
night.
Because
that one colorless mana that you're paying is going to save your butt so hard. Unless you got like some demonic pact with the person where you're like, good, yes, I will give you all the cards if you don't kill me first.
What do you do?
I don't know. Demonic pact, quick aside.
You should see the face he's making so frustrated about last night.
Well, I mean, just because like after you had a huge grip, I was like, the chances of me winning every time you drew a card in that deck specifically, I was like, it's going down. Tick-tock.
Yeah, it's just finding pieces.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It was a 5-color find the pieces deck. And like, you guys want to help him find the pieces?
Yeah. Our chances if we don't let him do that and we kill him first.
Yeah, which is pretty great. Yeah, Rhystic Study is so good.
It's a little spendy.
I really wish I could play it in the draft format. We played a Chaos Draft in Vegas, and I pulled it out of a pack. I was like, I wish I could play this, but I feel like it's like the 23rd card in the deck.
It's not as good, definitely, in a 1v1 format, for sure, because they can just make it so that it's useless.
It's useless, yeah. Yeah. It just, like,
you just waste a card on nothing.
And it time walks them 1 land, which isn't the worst thing in the world. But it is for every spell, which is nice. So if someone's just trying to play a bunch of small stuff, then you're going to just benefit off it because they can't do it. They can't pay that 1 extra for each card.
In multiplayer, it balloons on you, too. So if one person plays a bunch of stuff and doesn't pay for Rhystic Study, then the next person feels like they got to keep up with that last person.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
It's a good point.
Like, they feel like, I can't not play stuff because that guy played stuff, and all of a sudden, I'm going to be really vulnerable to him. So I have to play stuff, which means I'm going to have to let that person draw cards. And then the third person's like, well, they already drew so many cards. What's it matter? You know, and it can balloon on you. It can snowball on you.
Well, let's just say it does matter, friends. It does matter. Card advantage.
The more you know.
The more you know. Our number 4 is the same. Look at that. So they're number 3.
Hey, well, we always, near the end, sort of catch up. Although.
Yeah.
Although.
2 and 1 are.
Slightly different, but they're related. So,
yeah, they're related.
So our number 4, you want to say at the same time?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Deadeye Navigator. D-E-N. The one card that people call for banned more than the Prophet of Krufix, I think, is of the day.
I think it goes Iona, Deadeye Navigator, Prophet of Krufix.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Deadeye Navi is, I'd say, the second most.
I put Prophet at number 1, though. That card is too powerful.
I put Iona. I just think it's not fun. At least when Prophet's doing stuff, it's not stopping everybody else from doing stuff. But yeah.
It's true.
Anyway, Deadeye's on that list.
Yeah, 4 and blue for a 5/5 creature spirit with Soulbound. You may pair this creature with another unpaired creature when either enters the battlefield. They remain paired for as long as you control both of them. So when this comes in, you find a friend, and as long as Deadeye Navigator is paired with another creature, each of those creatures has one in the blue, exile this creature, then return to the battlefield under your control. So it's insta-flicker for one in the blue. As soon as it comes back into the battlefield, it pairs again with Deadeye Navigator, or you can flicker the Deadeye Navigator and pair it with something else.
And it comes back immediately. That's the thing when he says insta-flicker. Most flickers are the thing returns at end of turn.
Yeah.
This is it returns now, which means you can get those enter the battlefield effects like now.
It protects you from single one-to-one removal.
Yeah, you flicker it out. It saves itself.
Yeah, the big thing is like for one in the blue, you can just destroy people with enter the battlefield effects. You could just do this 4 times in the turn if you have 8 mana and 4 blue. It's like,
if you have a 6 slime, you just machine gun down stuff, or if you have whatever, a million effects,
yeah,
you
exactly.
draw 8 cards with Mulder.
This is in your rune deck?
Yeah. You know what? I took it out.
Really? It's too unfun?
It's a little too powerful, and I didn't need it. The deck's plenty powerful.
Right.
Yeah, but I did have it in there, and it's very, very good.
Yeah. It's just really annoying. It's kind of like Sensei's Divining Top in that when you have something that can protect itself for cheap or nothing, it increases the power level by so much in the format.
I also felt like that deck already has Prophet of Kruphix, so I didn't want both of those cards in one deck, so I like Prophet better.
Too bad I can't play Iona in there as well.
We have the same number 3.
Yeah.
Let's read it together again. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Glenalendra Archmage. Archmage? Archmage. Glenalendra. Oh, my gosh.
We thought that this person, the woman on the picture, was Glenalendra, but turns out Glenalendra is a place.
Yeah.
And Archmage is just like sort of her rank.
It just happens
like there's
like
a bunch of these on that plane.
Yeah, it just happens that, well, actually, there's Glenalendra Liege, Pranksters, and then the Sentinels of Glenalendra.
So those are all like, there's multiple of those things on this plane.
But as far as I'm concerned, she's always just going to be Glenalendra to me. Like, that is her name. It's not the plane. It's because Glen is a real name, and it's just like, it's so tough. Wizards, why'd you do this? Glen's a real name. Glen Close.
So we can sound foolish and people can correct us, Jimmy.
Yeah, clearly. Glenalendra Archmage, 3 in the blue for a 2/2 flyer. So already that's like, okay, cool, you have a flyer, but oh my gosh. 1 blue, sacrifice Glenalendra Archmage, counter target non-creature spell.
And if that wasn't bad enough,
persist. So when it gets put into the graveyard, when you sacrifice it or when you chump block with it or whatever, if it had no -1/-1 counters on it, it returns to play with a -1/-1 counter on it. And you get to do it twice.
Yep.
If you have Graft, like your Marchesa dex does,
you get to do it as many times as you want. If you get in Flicker it, it comes back in, loses the -1/-1 counter, and you can use it as many times as you want. If you can recur it from your graveyard somehow or give it a +1/+1 counter, like... That's the thing about Glenalendra is you can get into these scenarios and it's not that difficult where you can literally counter every non-creature spell that anyone's going to play for the whole game.
So insane, yeah.
Cathar's Crusade, if she bounces, comes back the 1/1 counter comes on her and it takes off the -1 counter. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, the fact that it's everything but creature spells seems like, oh, but you can't counter a creature. It's like, doesn't matter. Non-creature spells are what drive this format more than anything else. Like, sure, someone plays a bunch of stuff, and unless they're dropping a Crater Hoof Behemoth, it's like they drop Doubling Season or whatever,
yep.
or a Planeswalker.
Counter.
Counter, yep. Counter, yeah. Those are the big ones.
Insurrection.
That you want to get rid of. Insurrection,
counter.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many of win conditions are creature-based? I mean, there are some, but it's most of the big, flashy win conditions are non-creatures.
Yeah. And just having this out on the board will stop everyone from playing stuff because no one wants to just lose their spell needlessly.
For nothing, yeah. It also protects your win condition. So if you're about to cast Time Stretch, you might play Glenalendra first so that when it comes around to your turn, you're pretty secure that you're going to get your Time Stretch through somebody else's counterspell.
Yeah.
Super powerful, reusable counterspell, just mean.
Yeah, the fact that she comes back is where it's really just so, so mean.
You know what's funny is... Deadeye Navigator is on that list of cards people want banned.
Yeah.
And Glenalendra is not. And we both have her ranked higher than Deadeye Navigator on our list. It's interesting. It's because Glenalendra is more useful in more decks. So Deadeye Navigator is really useful in decks with a lot of flicker and enter the battlefield effects. Mm-hmm. But that's not every deck. Glenalendra, if you're playing blue, fits in the deck.
Yeah, has to be in there.
Yeah.
In fact, if you're not playing Glenalendra in your deck, you crazy.
You crazy, man.
All right. My number 2... turns out, Josh, It's under $25 as of this recording.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got lucky by the new set coming and bringing it down.
Yeah, the new set coming and bringing it down. Yeah. It is Cryptic Command, everybody. The greatest blue counterspell I believe that exists. Josh may disagree.
It's very good.
It is very good, but it does kind of fail one of our categories, which is how useful is it in a multitude of decks and color combinations. Because this card is one blue, blue, blue. It's 4 mana total for a counterspell, and it has 3 blue symbols in it.
It literally does everything.
Yeah, let's go back over the quadrant theory. Does it enable or combat a strategy which is prevalent in EDH?
Well, it combats all strategies.
Yeah, is it useful in a multitude of decks if you can play it? Yep. Yes. It's mana cost 4? Yeah, it's all right. Quadrant theory if you're behind? Yep. If you're ahead?
Yep.
If you're a parody? Yep.
Developing's the only one where it's not great.
Yeah, exactly. But you have other cards in your deck for that. So
I mean, literally, look, it fights tokens, it fights Voltron, it fights board wipes, doesn't fight mana ramp,
but it does
have card draw on it.
Yeah, it helps you win the game by tapping everything out. Okay, so it's a modal card, so you have to choose two of the abilities on it. It's an instant speed. The first one is counter target spell. That's nice. The second is return target permanent to its owner's hand. It's a bounce. That's nice. The third one is tap all creatures your opponents control or draw a card. So any combination of these two is insanely powerful. There's so many games that are won just be like, I'll tap your whole board down and then I'll swing back on the crackback. I'll kill you.
That's the part that is sort of people don't talk about or don't think about. But I've seen you use that so many times to just win. Tap all your stuff, swing and win. Or somebody thinks, oh, I've got you. I've got enough tokens. And you go, hold on, before combat, tap all your stuff, draw a card. And then that's all the time you need to.
Yeah. And it's crazy. We have that legendary story where I threatened everyone with the Cryptic Command.
Yep.
And I literally played it probably 4 or 5 times because everyone was like, I could swing at you. But I was like, I have Cryptic Command. I'll tap down your whole board and you'll die the next turn for someone else swinging at you. You'd be like, I won't swing at you. I pass turn. I gas Cryptic Command for free.
Yeah. I virtually tapped all your stuff because you did not
get... Yeah, I was like, sweet. And then on my turn, I can just tap it all down and swing and kill you or whatever. Yeah, Matt was so frustrated when that was happening because he's like the gamer that saw it happening. It was like, you guys are... It was like me and Ristic Study. It's like he saw it happening and that no one was doing anything about it.
This is a PSA from Matt Arnold.
Yeah.
If somebody does that to you, you have to make them use the Cryptic Command. Otherwise, they just are using it every turn.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is like no one wants to be that person that has to put themselves in the vulnerable position.
Yeah, so. I want you to use it on him, so I'm just gonna wait.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like I'm not doing anything. Like I'm just hanging out over here behind my propaganda.
This card is really, really good. I probably should have had it on my list. Two factors contributed to why I didn't. One is until recently I didn't even have one. I did win that foil one in our draft with Doc and Kenji, but I haven't really got a chance to play with it much. I mean, I've seen you use it, and I've seen people use it. I know the power of the card, but I haven't actually felt it, so that probably contributed. The other thing is just 3 blue.
Yeah, it's tough to play. Two-color decks are much happier playing it.
3-color decks is okay. I play a lot of 5-color decks. You can't even really play a card with 3 of the same color in a 5-color deck. It's just your chance to cast it at any...
In any of your 3-color decks with blue, though, is blue not a dominant color? I feel like, in general, blue is going to be...
Definitely in the Tim deck it is. I think in the Flicker deck, it probably is about equivalent to the other two.
Yeah.
It could... Like, Joyra is a 2-color deck. It could probably go in there, which is probably where I'll put it.
Oh, yeah, it could definitely go in there.
Yeah, I just didn't own one before, so it wasn't in there. But, yeah. That's a miss. That's a punt on my...
A giant punt.
It should be on my top 10 somewhere. Probably.
I don't know. I didn't get Fate Stitcher on here. Maybe I should have.
Fate Stitcher is one of those cards, though, I think people... A lot of people won't... I'm going to get yelled at for not having Cryptic Command. I apologize.
It's okay, because I got it on there. Yeah, yeah. It's
okay,
a great card.
My number 2 is your number 1, so I'm going to let you go ahead and lead since it's your number 1.
Oh, right, and I saved my number one.
I'm a number 1 guy.
Or in this case, Sphinx. You're my number 1 Sphinx, Consecrated Sphinx. You my bae. You my best. I don't even know what that stands for. Before anyone else, there you go. Yeah, Consecrated Sphinx, guys. Hooray, we did it. This card is...
Bonkers.
Yeah, it's the best card ever. I don't know why it's so cheap.
This is another card people talk about as possibly wanting to have it banned. The outcry is not as much as those other cards.
It's not as bad as like Prophet of Kruphix, I don't think, but it's still insanely powerful. It's 4 and blue for a 4/6 flying Sphinx. Whenever an opponent draws a card, you may draw 2 cards. Wow. It's
incredible.
Yeah, in Craig's multiplayer cube, if you see this card, you immediately take it. It doesn't matter if you're not even playing blue. You play this card. it only takes two turns to go by for you to just fully maximize off of this. If someone else is just doing random card draw shenanigans, oh my gosh. If someone has a Temple Bell, you draw two for every single person that draws off of that.
It's insane. And it's very, very difficult for it to not at least get you one extra card out of it, right? Because you play it, say go, they draw two cards, or they draw a card, you draw two. Even if the worst happens and at that moment they get rid of it,
at least you got some cards.
You're up cards.
Yeah.
You know, that's it's not great, but it's fine. Nothing that bad happens. Now, in the good case scenarios where you make it back to your turn and you drew six extra cards or eight extra cards, that's insanity.
Yeah, you are so much further ahead of everyone else when that happens. It's my number one because it's also just a 4/6 in the air and it can block a ton of stuff and fly.
You almost never block with it, though. You don't want to risk it.
You're very risky, yeah. But yeah, you can attack people with it. It's just a big Sphinx thing. It's awesome. It's a great card.
Yeah, I for a long time I was like number one, number two, number one, number two, number one, number two. And the only reason I went with my number one over it, which my number one is Pact of Negation.
Yep, it's my number six.
That was the number six that you didn't talk about. Yeah. So Pact of Negation is a zero casting cost instant. It says counter target spell, but at the beginning of your next upkeep, pay 3 and 2 blue. If you don't, you lose the game. So there's some risk. Here's the thing I like about Pact of Negation, and Force of Will would fit into this category. It's just too expensive. Is it enables your win condition.
Yeah.
So there's all these moments where I'm going to do some big thing, and I need a sequence of things. I need to play this and then play this, and I need them both to land. But I don't have enough mana, because you rarely have enough mana to also do two things and hold up enough for a counterspell. And Pact of Negation, you don't have to. And that's just so powerful to, for free, have this card in your hand that protects your win condition that you're about to play.
Yeah, that's why Force of Will is so good and that much more expensive, because there is no upkeep cost the next time it rolls around. But Pact of Negation is true. Like, if I had that yesterday, I could have stopped your Faith's Reward from getting everything back.
Yep.
Because it's just sometimes it comes down to, like, I have one counterspell and they have another one and you're fully tapped out. It's like, well, yes, I'm done for.
I mean, if Insurrection is in your hand and you know it's going to win if it resolves, then having Pact of Negation is so powerful, because it means that that Insurrection will probably make it through. This card is just one of those cards when you have it in your hand, you feel like the game is in your control. Nothing that bad can happen.
And except also, you lose the game if you can't tap.
You know what? Literally why I put it to number one over the Consecrated Sphinx. Like, I'm just trying to look for reasons. I have them both. They're in contention. It's like a race, and it's like, Sphinx, no, Pact, Sphinx.
It makes sense for...
It's a counterspell.
It's a counterspell, yeah.
And it's blue. And it's thought, like, man, if my number one is not a counterspell, then I haven't done justice to what blue is.
True.
But also, you could make that argument for a card draw, because that's the other thing that blue does very well, so...
Gosh, blue, such a powerful color. There are so many cards that couldn't make the list. We have a ton of honorable mentions. These may as well be on the top 10 list.
They could be, and in any given deck, they could be better than a lot of the cards on our list.
Yeah, exactly. You want to talk about your top one?
Sure. This is Memnarch is the one that I said, because you wouldn't normally think of it as a blue card, but in Commander, it is.
It counts as a blue card.
Yeah, exactly. It's a legendary artifact creature wizard, 7 mana. It's a 4/5. It says pay 1 and 2 blue, target permanent becomes an artifact in addition to its other types. And then for 3 and a blue, gain control of target artifact. So you just start turning stuff into artifacts and stealing it.
Yeah.
This is an effect we didn't really have in our top 10s.
It costs, by the way,
7 mana
to do both things. So after you've cast it and you have enough mana to do it.
Yeah. We didn't have a lot of steal other people's creatures. In fact, you had bribery, but in our top 10s. And I was really... I felt bad that I didn't have an effect on my top 10 list that was like stealing other people's stuff, because that's so one of the big things blue does. Memnarch is just so good at it, and there's so many ways to just steal the whole board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even just taking artifacts is insane.
Yeah. Just, hey, take your Soul Ring next turn, you know.
Yeah.
Take your whatever creature,
It's like, I will turn your Avacyn into an artifact and then steal it.
Yep.
It just takes... anything. Target permanent becomes an artifact. You can
take their land.
You can take their land. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Muddle the Mixture was one of my honorable mentions. It's blue for an instant counter target instant or sorcery spell. So it is a counter spell, but the big one is Transmute. 1 blue. You can discard this card, search your library for a card with the same converted mana cost as this card, reveal it, and put it into your hand. So you can just find a random 2-drop with it. Lots of good cards to find with something like Muddle the Mixture. It's also just a card that like I put this into our deck doctors when you needed to find a certain enchantment that was a two drop or whatever.
Yep, yep.
It's just nice to have that option
to find the assault formation
to counter something and also tutor for something specific. But usually, if your deck is built right, you will have very valid targets for it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a super strong card. I have that in almost all my blue decks too. Here's a weird one, and I don't think it almost made my top 10, but I did want to mention it, is Perplexing Chimera. It's 4 and a blue for a 3/3 enchantment creature chimera. It says, whenever an opponent casts a spell, you may exchange control of Perplexing Chimera and that spell. If you do, you may choose new targets for the spell. So spell means anything. If they cast a creature, while it's on the stack, you go, oh, I'll give you Perplexing Chimera, and then that creature's coming into play on my side. But if they cast Insurrection, oh, I'll give you Perplexing Chimera, I'll take the Insurrection.
Doesn't sack outlet.
Yeah.
It's like, aha!
It doesn't work super well against board wipes, is sort of the big downfall, because they cast Wrath of God. If you exchange control of it, well, you still wrath all creatures.
Right. Unless it's something that's a one-sided wrath.
There you go. Oh, if they do Ingeric's Wake, boom, take it. If they do Cyclonic Rift,
oh, right.
Boom, take it. This card is extremely powerful. When it's on the board, it will make your opponents play in like a really strange way because they don't want to give you anything good.
Yeah, they all just sort of stop casting stuff, or they cast crappy stuff and like, do you want to take that?
And combined with Flicker, it is insane. It literally takes the control of the whole game if you can Flicker it.
Oh, that's right, because you can just start putting it in, yeah.
And you're like, I give you this in exchange for your spell, then I Flicker it, it comes back to play under its owner's control, which is me, and then I just do it again to the next thing.
I feel like being able to do it at instant speed is really good, too, so you can just be like, aha, I will, like, if they cast a Cyclonic Rift, I will flash this in and steal the spell.
Yep.
It's pretty insane. Perplexing Chimera also, if you guys have ever seen the movie Princess Mononoke, it looks exactly like
it does.
The beast thing in the beginning of the movie, or at the end of the movie, where it's like got these little things coming out of it.
Which is an awesome movie, by the way.
It's an awesome movie, yeah. That could totally be one of our end steps. Another card that I really like, they're actually lands. We don't talk about lands too much because we'll have a whole land episode, but these are specifically blue lands. There's Minamo, School at Water's Edge.
Oh, man, how did you say this and I didn't say it? I feel so bad now.
Yeah, you can tap it to add blue to your mana pool, and then you can also tap one blue and tap this untap target legendary permanent.
So good.
Yeah, so that also includes stuff like Perforosa's Hammer, you know, and stuff, because it's a legendary artifact. But mostly you're using this to untap your commander. If you have like Arcanus the Omnipotent out there, I almost said Arcanus the Impotent.
No, he's definitely
potent. He's omnipotent. Yeah, he's drawing lots of cards.
Or just like Rune, just to use him twice, you know, flicker two things.
Yeah, exactly.
Minamo is awesome.
Yeah. There's also Academy Ruins, which you can artifacts to the top of your deck with it. And they're both specifically blue lands because they require blue in their activation cost, so.
All right, the last one I'll say under my honorable mentions is Stasis.
Oh, yeah.
This is a mean card. I'm not necessarily saying play it. I have it on only one deck. It makes players skip their untap step, all players, but you have to pay one blue as an upkeep. So ostensibly, you'll eventually not be able to play the blue because you're not untapping your lands because you have no untap step.
Only one blue.
There are a million ways to keep the Stasis going. It's just an incredibly powerful effect.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those effects. There's not a lot of cards that do what this does. There's Brine Elemental. There's a couple others, but it's pretty unique. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of like they attack. They tap all their mana. You play Stasis. They just don't really get a turn for a couple of rounds of the table if you do it right, and maybe forever. Yeah.
If someone like Pact of Negations and then you play Stasis on the next turn,
they're dead.
They die. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah. And a couple of cards we should mention that are expensive but are kind of staples of the format if you have the money to get them. Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Oh yeah. So good.
We don't need to
brainstorm
talk about,
every
yeah,
turn.
Yeah. He also has Fate Sealing, and so he's just an incredible planeswalker.
He's like what, $80 now?
Yeah, he's actually going down slowly. There's also Snapcaster Mage, which
is going the other way. It's going up.
Yeah, it's going up. That has to be one of the best blue creatures of all time.
For sure.
If it didn't cost that much, it would have made the list. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like $80 also now.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like $30 like a few months ago.
And I bought a bunch, fortunately.
You are a smart man.
Yeah. So Snapcaster Mage, we'll just read him just so you guys know. It's a one in the blue for a flash wizard. Looks like Ken, whatever name from The Hangover.
Ken Jeong.
Yeah, but it was actually modeled after a champion winner. I don't know.
It
was
it's one of the invitational cards.
Invitational cards, yeah.
I forget who it was, but yeah.
When Snapcaster Mage enters the battlefield, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn, and the flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. So you can just play, again, any card in your library at instant speed.
In your graveyard.
In your graveyard, sorry, yeah. You can flash this in to get a counterspell, and, you know, it's...
And you can recur it, and you can do it again. Yeah. A really good cheap alternative is the new Jace.
That's right.
Kid Jace, when he flips over.
It's like $30 now, too, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's way cheaper than Snapcaster. But when he flips, you can. Yeah, true. So, John Waters, you have a chance to open a Jace. And if you do, I expect you to tweet a picture of it at us, especially if it's foil.
Yeah. His minus three is essentially the Snapcaster ability where you can choose a target instant or sorcery and give it flashback.
Yeah, and the thing about Kid Jace is you could potentially do that a couple times because you can plus him, get back to it, do it again.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, and now moving on to the end step where we talk about something cool outside of the world of Magic.
Something very exciting. I got to be on BBC America with my good friend Hannah Hart. She's hosting this new show called The Doctor's Finest, where they're sort of just building up to the new season of Doctor Who by showing the greatest episodes of all time. And I got to talk about the episode Blink, which is, have you ever seen Blink?
No.
It's, if you watch one episode of Doctor Who, you should just watch this one.
The best one?
Yeah. As far as standalone and just a really easy, soft intro to the series, yeah, because it's the Doctor isn't even a huge part of it. It's kind of like a mystery-esque like novella. It's like this awesome 40 to 50 minute piece, and it stands alone in the universe. You don't need to see any other Doctor Who to really understand it, and it's really great. Carey Mulligan is in it.
Okay.
She's a pretty well-known actress now. This is one of her first or earlier projects. But yeah, so I'm talking with Hannah about it on BBC America. You can actually just find everything on their YouTube page. But if you guys haven't seen this episode, it's on Netflix. It's on pretty much every video sharing site.
But I want to watch it with your commentary. So that where do I have to go to find that?
That's going
to
be on BBC America's YouTube channel. So I'll put the link in the show notes below.
Pretty cool.
Yep, yep, yep. Very exciting. All right, that's my end step. Pretty simple.
All right. Make sure to listen to our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, with Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. They talk about modern and all things competitive magic. They have a lot of sweet guests
on. They've had a lot of... Paul Rietzel was just on the show.
They made a lot of contacts at GP Vegas, and they've been just bringing them on one after another. Their show is just getting better and better. You can find them on rocketjump.com right next to us under the podcast tab, or you can go to Twitter and find them at the MMcast.
Our editor for the show is Eli Cuevas, and special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG for providing these sweet animated intros and segment switches during our YouTube videos. You can find all of our YouTube videos. They have card images and are essentially the same episode, but it's a great way to watch along so you don't have to look stuff up or listen to us fail to describe cards correctly. You can find that at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast.
Definitely check us out on YouTube. I think we're up above 5,000 subscribers
now. Thank you to everyone that subscribed. It's been awesome. Hopefully we're talking to a lot of new fans from Wedge and the Professor and Brainstorm Brewery and MTA Cast.
Maybe we'll give away some surprise prizes to a random YouTube subscriber here eventually.
That's got to be the next one.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.